Hi, I'm Daniel Gullikas, and welcome back to Geography 101. Today we are setting our compass for one of the most fascinating, concentrated, and contradictory place on Earth. A place that defies almost every expectations we have about what a country should be. A place that went from fishing village to a global powerhouse in a single generation. Today we're talking about Singapore. If you ever look at a map of Southeast Asia, you have seen it, a tiny diamond shaped island at the tip of Malay Peninsula, hovering just above the equator. It is small, remarkably small. At just over 700 square kilometers, you could fit Singapore into the city of Los Angeles, nearly four times over, and yet, what emerged from the silver of land is nothing short of extraordinary. Singapore is a country that measures its success not in landmass, but in leverage. It's a nation that turned the absence of natural resources into a superpower of human capital. It's a tropical island with no oil, no fresh water, no timber, no farmland to speak of, and it became one of the wealthiest nations on the planet. How? That is the story we are here to unpack. In these episodes, we will journey through Singapore's geography, its improbable history, its audacious urban planning, and the delicate balance act that keeps this tiny nation thriving. Whether you walk its immaculate streets or only dream of them, I invite you to learn in Singapore is a geography lesson unlike any other. Let us start with the land itself. Singapore is an island nation consisting of one main island and 63 smaller islands. It sits at the southern tip of peninsular Malaysia, separated by the narrow Johor Strait. To the south lies the Riau Archipelago of Indonesia. This location has always been its density. And of course, geographically, Singapore is equatorial. It experiences a tropical rainforest climate with no distinct seasons. Temperature hovers consistently between 25 and 31 degrees Celsius, with humidity that wraps around you like a warm blanket. There is no winter here, no autumn, no spring, just vibration of wet and dry. Rainfall is abundant, averaging over 2,300 millimeters annually. The northeast monsoon from December to March brings the heaviest rains, while the southwest monsoon from June to September brings drier conditions. This constant moisture once fueled dense primary rainforest that covered the entire island, though little of that original forest remains. The island was once dotted with mangrove swamps, freshwater streams, and low hills. The highest point, Bukit Timah Hill, rises to just 163 meters, hardly to mountain, but cherished paths of primary rainforest that still survives today. Protected as a nature reserve and home to monkeys, flying lemurs, and pangolins that have somehow persisted alongside one of the world's tensest urban environments. Singapore's coastline has been radically transformed. Land reclamation has expanded the country's land area by nearly 25% since independence in 1965. The city has uniquely literally built itself out into the sea, creating space for airports, ports, and entire residential district where open water once existed. The geography of Singapore is not given, it's engineered. To understand Singapore, you must understand its position on the map. It guards the southern entrance of Strait of Malacca, one of the most important shipping lanes on Earth. Approximately 30% of the global maritime trade passes through these narrow waters, including nearly half of the world's oil shipments. For centuries, this location was both blessing and curse. Whoever controlled Singapore controlled the checkpoint of Asian trade. In the 14th century, it was a trading outpost of the Suryavijaya Empire. By the 19th century, it had caught the eye of the British colonial officer named Stamford Raffles, who saw exactly what the location offered. Raffles established a British trading post in 1819, recognizing that the deep water harbor sheltered anchorage and strategic position of the tip of the Malay Peninsula created a natural entry port. Under the British rule, Singapore became a beating heart of the maritime Southeast Asia, drawing migrants from China, India, across the Malay Archipelago. This geography of convergence created a multi-ethnic society that defines Singapore today. This island became a crossroad where culture did not just meet, they mix. Chinese merchants, Indian laborers, Malays, traders, European colonists all arrived, settled and began weaving the complex of cultural fabric, or fabric that would eventually become a nation. Singapore's modern story is one of the greatest miracles of the 20th century. In 1965, Singapore was expelled from the Federation of Malaysia. It was not a proud declaration of independence, it was a painful, humiliating ejection that the island found itself suddenly alone. A tiny city-state with no resources, no military, and no reason to survive. The man who stepped forward was Lee Kuan Yew. In a moment of raw emotion that would be later described as a gut-wrenching, Lee addressed a press conference with tears streaming down his face. He declared that Singapore would survive. It was a promise made against all odds, backed only by will and almost terrifying clarity of vision. The challenges were staggering. Singapore had no natural resources. It had no fresh water of its own, relying on imports from Malaysia. It had a high unemployment and housing crisis, and racial tensions and that had erupted in violence just 1 year earlier. The island was a tropical city-state with no hinterland, no army, no identity beyond what would build. What Singapore had was location, human capital, and leader willing to make brutal choices. Lee and his team decided that Singapore would not survive by trying to be like its neighbors. It will be survived by being indispensable. It will become the most efficient, most stable, and most business-friendly, and most disciplined place in Southeast Asia. One of the first crises to address was housing. In the 1960s, much of Singapore's population lived overcrowded shop houses and squatter settlements. The new government launched a housing development board with a mandate to build affordable housing at scale. It's one of the most ambitious public housing projects in human history. Today, over 80% of Singaporeans live in HDB flats, public housing, and bears no resemblance to the stigmatized projects of other nations. They are thoughtfully designed towns with schools, clinics, markets, parks, and transit woven into fabric. As Singapore, HDB flat is not just a home, it's a statement that the nation invests in its people. Singapore's skyline is studying a vertical ambition. The downtown core bristles with skyscraper. It's competing for a place in the iconic silhouette. The Marina Bay Sands complex, with its ship-like structure perched atop three towers, has become the symbol of a modern Singapore, audacious futuristic and unmistakable. But the city is also obsessed with green. The city of Garden Vision Tribe's urban policy. Super trees, a garden's way, soared 50 meters into the air, covered the living plants. Building incorporate vertical gardens into their facades. Park connections weave through the city, allowing residents to walk from one end of the island to another without crossing a major road. The transformation is staggering. In 1965, Singapore was swampy, chaotic port city. Today, it's gleaming metropolis, where architecture serves policy, where every building, every park, every road has been designed with intentionality. This is not a city that grew organically. It is a city was constructed according to a vision. Singapore economy strategy can be summarized in one word: relevance. With no resources to export, Singapore decided to export capability. It built a port that is consistently ranked the world's best. It built an airport that travels routinely describes as a destination itself. It built a financial sector that rivals Hong Kong, Tokyo, and London. The formula was simple concept, brutal and execution. Singapore would offer the world three things: stability, efficiency, and complete absence of corruption. While its neighbors struggle with bureaucracy, cronyism, Singapore created a system where business could be designed and registered in hours, contract were enforced, and bribes simply did not exist. Foreign investment poured in, multinational corporations established in regional headquarters, manufacturing, electronics, pharmaceuticals, and precision. Engineering grew in world-class industries. The government invested heavily in education, creating a bilingual workforce fluent in English and their mother tongue. Human capital becomes Singapore's oil. Today, Singapore is one of the wealthiest nations on earth. By GDP per capita, surpassing the United States, Germany, and Japan. It's a global hub for finance, trade, logistics, and increasingly technology and innovations. The economy has evolved from labor-intensive and manufacturing to knowledge-intensive industries, always staying one step ahead of disruption. Yet this prosperity comes with costs. Singapore has one of the highest income inequality rates among developed nations. The cost of living is astronomical. Cars are prohibitively expensive due to quota system designed to manage congestion. Housing, while high quality, is increasingly unaffordable for younger generations. The miracle has winners and it has those who feel left behind. Singapore is a nation of four official languages: English, Mandarin, Malay, and Tamil. The countless unofficial ones spoken in homes and hawker centers. The population is approximately 70% Chinese, 14% Malay, and 9% Indian, and 2% other. This diversity was once a source of violence. Today is managed with deliberate care. The government's approach to race religion is often described as a pragmatic for critics. Controlling ethnic integration policy ensures that no public housing block becomes racially segregated. Religious harmony is reinforced by law. The goal is stability, even if it comes at the expense of what some would call freedom. The hawker centers is Singapore's cultural heart. These open-air food complexes are where the nation eats, and eating is what the nation does best. Chinese noodles, Malay satay, Indian biryani, Peranakan laksa, all available for few dollars. UNESCO recognized Singapore's hawker culture is an intangible cultural heritage, affirming what Singaporeans already knew: food is identity. There is a term often used to describe the Singaporean psyche, kaisu, a Hokkien word meaning afraid to lose. It captures the competitive drive that permeates the culture. Parents push children toward economic excellence, cues from everything from limited edition toys to Michelin-starred street food. There is a collective anxiety about falling behind that fuels the nation's relentless pace. But beneath the efficiency, there is also warmth. Singaporeans are famously reserved in public spaces but deeply loyal to family, friends, and community. The kampung spirit, a Malay term for village solidarity, is in vogue to describe the sense of mutual care that persists despite the high-rise modernity. It is a tension between individualism and collectivism that defines daily life. No discussion of a Singapore is complete without confronting its governance. The People's Action Party has ruled since 1959, making Singapore functionality one-party state. Critics point to restriction of free speech, press control, and the use of defamation lawsuits against opposition figures. The Singapore model is not a liberal democracy by Western standards. Yet Singaporeans have repeatedly returned the PAP to power with overwhelming majorities. The social contract is clear. The government delivers stability, prosperity, safety, and efficiency. In exchange, citizens accept constraints in political expressions, social experiments, and what might elsewhere be considered fundamental rights. The bargain has held for six decades. The government's approach is technocratic, sometimes to a fault. There is a policy for everything, from how many children citizens should be have to how many fish can be kept in a DB flat. The state is present in a daily in ways a world feels suffocating in many Westerners. But for the most Singaporeans, the trade-off has been worth it. The question facing Singapore now is what comes next. The founding generation is gone. New challenge, climate change, demographic decline, political succession, rising geopolitical tensions, press against the small islands, a social contract that worked the six decades of being tested. Can the Singapore model adapt to a generation that values voice and meaning alongside stability and prosperity? So what do we take from Singapore? It's a country that should not exist, but built on landmass too small, with resources too scarce, against odds too steep. And yet it does not just exist, it thrives. Singapore is the proof that geography is not destiny. What matters is what people decide to build upon the land they have been given. It's also warning. The efficiency is real, but so are the constraints. The prosperity is undeniable, but so as the pressure. Singapore asks hard questions about what we are willing to trade for safety, for order, for economic miracle. There is no easy answer, and the country's future will depend on how its people answer those questions for themselves. Singapore is geography of paradox. It's a tropical of hypermodern. It's an Asian and global, and it's a controlled and dynamic. It's a tiny and immense in influence. To understand Singapore is to understand the most powerful forces on earth are not oil reserves or a fertile soil. They are human will, collective discipline, and the audacity to dream beyond what the land suggests is possible. Thank you for joining me on this journey through Singapore. This is episode Spark Your Curiosity. I encourage you to dig deeper, read about this history, explore its literature, or better yet, visit the hawker centers and walk these immaculate streets. There's no aptitude for standing on the tip of what island, feeling the tropical heat, and witnessing one of the great human experiments in real time. Until next time, keep exploring. The world is waiting. And I'm your host, Daniel Lucas, and what can people see you soon?